Berman Books Media is proud to present Innovation, Where Creativity and Technology Meet. Written and read by Sathish Gopalan.
Suffers nothing to remain in her kingdoms, which cannot help itself. He is no whole man until he knows how to earn a blameless livelihood. Society is barbarous until every industrious man gets his living without dishonest customs. Ralph Waldo Emerson. This is an ordinary day in 2014. Throughout the course of the day, 294 billion emails will be exchanged, 4 billion videos will be viewed on YouTube, 500 terabytes will be uploaded to Facebook, 300 million tweets will find their way through the World Wide Web, and millions of freelancers will find work online. This is a year in which millions of people will share what makes them smile, as well as the ideas that they believe are important to themselves and relevant to others. Others will pursue their dream jobs as writers, biographers, motivational speakers, or graphic designers and make fortunes at just the click of a mouse. The rules have changed. In a single generation, revolutions in technology have transformed the way we live, work, and do business. President Obama. The course of life is a constant. The patterns of birth, growth, and death will remain the same regardless of the state of things. But throughout every age, there are those who dare to come up with innovations so that the rest of us can lead an easier and more comfortable life.
Right now, you know, starting in the late 80s till now, we are in a major inflection point in human civilization.
I think it's an uncertain time, but I think it's a very exciting time.
We are at an extraordinary time in the history of this planet.
Global competition is very, very challenging.
I don't think there's ever been a better time to be alive than right now.
If you are not doing some things that are crazy, then you're doing the wrong things. Larry Page, co-founder of Google. Now, more than ever, consumers put a premium on innovation and creativity. This, they feel, will enable them to choose the best products and pursue careers that promise the most opportunities. This, however, is tricky, as new and fresh ideas often have shelf lives of just a few years, sometimes a few months.
The world as it exists today, wealth is not primarily judged in terms of land or of industry, or even of money. The basic currency is ideas.
The good news is that the capacity to innovate and the incentive towards innovation have never been as rapid and ubiquitous as they are today. At a time when many feared that the desire to read was shrinking, the Amazon Kindle was launched. This device gives readers a brand new way to control what they read at any given moment. And then there is iTunes. When Apple broke the monopoly of the music industry, they empowered listeners to take control of their personal record collections. Now, iTunes dominates most media marketplaces, Hollywood movies, podcasts, and even books and magazines. The consumer can program his television viewing habits and no longer has to allow a network to dictate the pace at which he watches his favorite TV drama. He has even taken television away from the television set. The consumer has also found easier ways of becoming the creator. Websites like Kickstarter have cut out the middleman so that artists can fund projects themselves. Even our celebrities have followed suit. Corporations have felt the demand for more creativity, more innovation, and more individual expression, and they have responded. Innocentive is a global leader in crowdsourcing, an innovation trend in which thousands of individuals compete to provide solutions to the world of business, policies to the world of politics, and ideas to the world of science. The effects of digital fabrication on manufacturing have created a new industrial revolution. Moreover, advances in robotics are reshaping how factories and warehouses operate. One such robot is Baxter, designed by Rethink Robotics' Rodney Brooks, a former MIT professor. Baxter comes with a unique low price point and provides a compelling alternative to low-cost offshoring for manufacturers of all sizes. Here, we can see how robotics and automation have affected the automobile industry. Will there come a time when these robots and automation systems take over the majority of routine jobs?
We live in a dramatically new world. We live in a world where it's no longer about command and control, it's about connect and collaborate. I mean, you look at the net right now, and what it's done is it's literally democratized leadership. Every single person can have an impact, every single person can have a following, every single person can have a platform, whether it's on Facebook or on Twitter or on YouTube. So my message is really a simple one, which is no matter what your title is, no matter what your station in society is, no matter what your background is, it's no longer a valid excuse to say, I can't lead, I can't have an impact. It's no longer an excuse to say, I'm a taxi driver, so I can't influence other people. No matter who we are, where we work, where we live, around the world, every single one of us can shift from being a victim to showing leadership.
Earth is divided up into natural barriers. Throughout man's primitive beginnings, the only means of transportation were animals and one's own feet, until the invention of the wheel. Then, civilization began to move forward at a faster pace than ever before. But there were some natural barriers that continued to serve as obstacles to mankind's evolution. Among them was the ocean. So man found a way to overcome that obstacle by inventing the sailboat. Water was a barrier no longer. Centuries later, James Watt's steam engine brought forth a mammoth innovation that yielded the railroads of the land and the steamships of the sea. By the mid-19th century, Samuel Morse had given us the telegraph. By the late 19th century, Alexander Graham Bell had delivered the telephone. These new forms of transportation and communication broke down almost every natural barrier there was, bringing people closer together and making the world smaller and smaller. The only barrier left was the sky. In 1903, the Wright brothers took part in their first successful flight. In the past, artisans crafted with their hands. It was this alone that determined the quality of their products. During the industrialization process, man created machines that would reduce the rigors of labor considerably. Meanwhile, the seeds of wireless communication and satellite technology were sown throughout the 20th century. Once these seeds blossomed, people were able to send messages to any part of the globe in no time at all. Furthermore, The invention of semiconductors and transistors triggered revolutions in radio, television, and computers. But the real magic began when the internet was finally commercialized in the 1990s, followed closely by the creation of the World Wide Web at the hands of Sir Tim Berners-Lee in 1991. This was the point when the nature of innovation evolved into an exponential fashion. The great minds, responsible for every leap forward, knew that the established wisdom of their times was not absolute. They trusted their instincts and were bold enough to pursue a better world for future generations. Today, we call these great minds revolutionaries. They spearheaded revolutions in science, in philosophy, in spirituality, in the arts, in democracy and in human rights, and finally, in science and technology. In every innovation age, there are many bold souls with moonshot thinking skills who are able to cook up grand surprises for the masses. But in spite of overcoming geographical barriers, man has still had to deal with various challenges. Disease, natural disasters, bloodshed, economic crises, and a myriad of other difficulties that have threatened to slow our progress. And yet, man has always prevailed. Thanks to scores of innovators who use their creative potential enough to march forward, help us to thrive, and lead us to a new age of progress. Are the challenges we face in the 21st century any different from those we've encountered in the past? Could it be that the only thing changing is the nature of the challenges itself?
In the old days, all you had to learn the motions expected of you. Think, for example, of Taylor's work. You didn't have that many choices. You got the job. The promise was you do a good job. The government, the people, you'll get a pension. You just got to know what the skills are that they taught you when you were 20.
As technology continues to evolve exponentially, those who work routine labor jobs have found their careers under threat from computers that can do their jobs in a cheaper and arguably more efficient way. We've seen variations on this before, when Western factories are relocated to those where cheap labor is instantly accessible. Today, the economy is faced with another disruptive business model: the online job market. Anyone with a special talent, a computer, and an internet connection can start a career as a freelancer, receiving commissions from all over the world. Any job that can be eliminated either by cheap labor or by internet freelancing is at risk. A New York City grad student may now face competition from an equally hard-working young person in India. The cost for a business of failing to tap into the global network is exorbitant, while the benefits can be infinite.
I think this world is in a very fascinating time. I mean, there's never been so much change. There's never been so much uncertainty. There's never been so many people who are going through this state of confusion. There's never been so much disruption. But old structures must be disrupted before new and better structures can start show up.
Let us meet some truly creative minds of the new age. A young man who has disrupted such old structures and tapped into the unlimited potential of internet connectivity is Salman Khan, founder of Khan Academy, the world's largest virtual university. He is widely known as the major education reformer of the 21st century.
Education, which is fundamentally about knowledge and information, and it's been completely static. It hasn't changed at all. And so, the little inkling in my eye was that. Gee, you know, this video thing, well, why can't it reach everybody? And if you augment it with software, and if you augment it with all the other tools that exist in all these other industries, why can't you do something as fundamentally, that so fundamentally challenges the norm as a free world-class education for anyone? And I don't think we're anywhere near there yet, but that's our mission. And we're going to, you know, everything we do is going to try to get us to that ideal.
Some of the videos available through Khan Academy include lessons on basic arithmetic problems, as well as complex animation tutorials, U.S. history lectures, and lessons on the Industrial Revolution, and it's all for free. Even Microsoft leader and billionaire Bill Gates uses Khan's materials and raves about them on his YouTube channel.
It's all Khan has done is amazing. He's taken all this material and broken them down into little 12-minute lectures. I use it myself to remind myself of things. I have children who like it. I think it's a huge contribution.
I was tutoring my cousins, literally, and I had to kind of figure out a way to scale myself up, so I started recording YouTube videos, and I started making little software modules for them, but I made it so anyone could use them and started getting a lot of traction.
But beyond these simple and accessible videos, there is something behind the enormous success of Sal Khan and his dedicated team at Khan Academy. What makes him such a force of nature in the education world?
I see Sal Khan as a pioneer in an overall movement to use technology to let more and more people learn things, know where they stand. It's the start of a revolution.
Phil Libin is the CEO of Evernote, one of the fastest growing cloud technology-based companies in the world. Evernote's mission is to help people around the globe to remember everything, capture anything, and access it anywhere.
There's certainly nothing original in that concept with Evernote. People have been creating ways to write things down and capture memories and organize them for tens of thousands of years. I think when we decided that this was the right time to build Evernote, we did it because we thought the technology was just getting to the point where it was feasible to really tackle this idea, to take this great old idea of improving everyone's memory and actually build something that would be useful to hundreds of millions of people.
Tony Hsieh is the chief executive officer of Zappos.com, the most popular online shoe company in the world.
Business, it's never a question of not having enough resources. It's a question of not having enough resourcefulness.
A successful businessman at a young age, he is an inspirational force for millions of young entrepreneurs around the world.
Growing up, one of my favorite TV shows was MacGyver. For people that haven't seen it, he would always be stuck in these situations where he didn't have exactly the right ideal set of tools or resources that he needed in order to get out of the situation. But somehow he would figure out creatively, he would take, say, duct tape and a pencil and a paperclip and create a sailboat out of it, and then he'd be the hero at the end of the hour. That's part of what I love about being an entrepreneur. You basically get to play MacGyver every day with business.
Zappos.com is considered one of the best managed companies in the world. Both their business model and their success story are taught in business schools all around the globe.
My inspiration for Exodus Data Centers was Walmart.
KB Chandrasekhar co-founded Exodus Communications Data Center in 1994. Under his watch, he saw quite a few technological giants launch into the stratosphere. His new company, Jamcracker, out in Santa Clara, California, is a pioneer of cloud service brokerage enablement solutions.
If you look at Sam Walton, the way he developed it, he was the first one to develop the standard store formats. What he used to call it as a Class A, Class B, Class C, depending on the size of the town or the demographics. One day I was reading that book and that inspired me. And also about how he built such an empire. That led me to say how I can apply those principles in the data center market.
So if you ask, how did I come up with, say, neuromarketing? I did not sit in a chair like this one day and invent it and think about it. Not at all.
Dr. A.K. Pradeep is the founder and CEO of Neurofocus, the world's leading neuromarketing firm. His company brings advanced neuroscience knowledge and expertise to the world of branding, product development, packaging, marketing, and advertising.
I was working with a large company CMO. I was consulting with a person, and he said to me, listen, Pradeep, we spend $6 billion on advertising and marketing. We don't quite know what we get for that. I said, my God, I don't know how to help you. It's a very hard question. So on the plane ride back to San Francisco, there's a guy sitting next to me, and I asked him what he did for a living. And he said, oh, you know, I'm a neuroscientist. I said, well, what does a neuroscientist do? He said, well, I measure attention in children and help them when they don't pay enough attention. ADD, attention deficit disorders, I measure them and I treat them. When people have emotional problems and they, you know, don't quite know how to deal with them, I measure them and I treat them. When people have memory problems, especially when people age, there are memory problems. When people have memory problems, I measure them, the progress or the loss of it, and treat them. That's what I do for a living. I said, wait a minute. You measure attention, you measure emotion, and you measure memory. 1 hour ago, my friend asked me, does anybody pay attention to my advertising? Is anybody emotionally engaged with our brand? Does anybody remember our messaging? The very same things my friend said, I'm spending $6 billion in trying to find out, you are measuring in clinics every day. Why can I not apply this science to solve that problem? That is how Neurofocus was born.
With the old way of thinking, we cannot solve our new problems. We must learn to ask why and why not. George Bernard Shaw. These individuals, at once creative and innovative, represent a microcosm of the 21st century mavericks who are bringing radical breakthroughs to education, technology, business, and engineering.
One of the things that every great leader and every great business person has is not one of them accept the status quo.
One of the most distinguishing characteristics of highly creative people, which is their ability to embrace the unknown, to be comfortable and even maintain their smile in the face of uncertainty and change.
While qualities such as talent and higher education are important, these people share one singular quality that exists within all of us, courage. The courage to accept challenges and to break down barriers. For these revolutionaries, creativity is not just a passive acceptance of the established, but a proactive movement beyond the established.
We cling to what I call the safe harbor of the known. We think that if we think the same thoughts, have the same conversations, watch the same TV shows, eat the same food, it's going to be safe. But actually, the riskiest move is staying in the comfort zone. True safety, true freedom, true leadership, true excellence, true happiness comes from one thing: leaving the safe harbor of the known every single day and moving out to the blue ocean by taking risks, by learning, by stretching, by moving into your next level of excellence and possibility.
Classical musician Benjamin Zander is an expert on creativity. He has led the Boston Philharmonic Orchestra since 1979 and is a Grammy nominee. He's an acclaimed conductor, composer, and arranger, and is also a teacher and a speaker.
We get into patterns, safe patterns, which are routines, which keep us on a firm path in which we don't really have to think. And like, you know, we get up in the morning and we do our hair, we brush our teeth, and we have breakfast and we go to work, and we come home and we sit and watch television and we have a cup of tea and we go to bed. Right? At the end of that process we die. And that's not a creative life. Creative life is where you stay open to whatever comes towards you, and instead of rejecting it, you embrace it and create something out of it.
By trying this different way of doing things and different ways of thinking, you may actually find ways to change what you think is the life that has been imposed on you. One of the worst things for people to do, I think, is to take for granted that their position in life is fixed, that they have to go all through life doing what everybody else wants them to do, what the situation around them makes them do. And that kind of passive acceptance of external conditions is terrible.
Mihai Csikszentmihalyi is a big name in the academe. He is a famous and highly sought-after professor in the field of psychology, best known for his work in the study of happiness and creativity.
You have to understand very well one domain of culture. A domain would be like mathematics or religion or music or art. You have to be very good at one domain. You have to then break away from that domain and say, this is good, but I can do better here somewhere. And then try to do better. And then you need what I call a field, which is a group of people who are gatekeepers to the domain. And the field has to feel that what you think is better is really better, and then they have to say, okay, now your mathematical theorem is so good that we'll make that part of mathematics. So your idea now becomes part of the domain, so that the next generation of children will learn your theory too. And the same thing with everything.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?